Okay, everybody, workday is over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
So the NBA draft was last night, Giglio, and nobody cares about who got drafted. Oh, cool, Jalen Johnson got drafted by the Hawks. Sweet. You know, Scotty Barnes, he got drafted from Florida State. No, everything that was dominated by the conversation was by what the Lakers did by trading and getting Russell Westbrook from the Washington Wizards. I guess Russell Westbrook, Mr. No Super Team, has no problem joining this particular super team with the Lakers. And it doesn't like alleviate all of the Lakers' problems. They still have depth issues. And we saw that play out with all the injuries with LeBron James and Anthony Davis last year. But when you know when they're on, like we saw in the bubble, it doesn't matter. If Anthony Davis is going to be on one, if LeBron James is healthy, you can overcome all that stuff, especially with them defensively. So my question is, what exactly is Russell Westbrook bringing to the table? I mean, they already have LeBron James, who's a playmaker. I mean, it's one of his... Everybody gets caught up in the Jordan stuff, but I think most people recognize that LeBron James is more of an analogous to, like, Magic Johnson, right? You still got Anthony Davis, who, when healthy, is going to take care of business. And I preface this by saying it's not like I'm fully immersed in the NBA, but even this casual NBA fan knows that Russell Westbrook isn't exactly... filling it up from outside, which is one of the things that the Lakers have needed. I know they didn't win a championship by filling it up outside, but you still need that. You still need that element. So I'm not quite sure what Russell Westbrook is bringing to the table here.
That's one way to look at it. Not known for being great, playing well with others.
There's that. You could There's say that too.
That's fair.
That's why I said you already have LeBron James in that regard.
I'd push back in this sense. I think he's going to make Anthony Davis better. He's the type of player that you could put on the floor with Anthony Davis and immediately make Anthony Davis better. And I think what you'll see in a regular season setting, as we saw 2 years ago when the Lakers won the NBA title, you'll see, if he's healthy enough, Anthony Davis be the primary focal point of that team with Russell Westbrook. And then LeBron James is in now really a tertiary role during the regular season, Joe. They get to the playoffs, though, you're in a position where the Nets were this year, where you're going to have to figure out how all three of them can play at the same time. I think they're more disparate in their skill set than what the Nets have.
Okay.
But I also think you're talking about adding an ultra athletic piece to a team that kind of goes against the NBA grain and is defense first.
Mm-hmm.
That's only a good thing. The mileage he can help save on both AD and LeBron, only a good thing. But to your point, I think there's going to be an adjustment on how all three know how to play together and figure out how to play together.
Hey, we all thought this about the Brooklyn Nets with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving.
And we were right.
And James Harden. Well, almost.
No, we were right. They needed to figure out how to play, but then they only were, what, eight games
they
together?
They only played eight games together, and they were literally one foot away.
Not even a foot, right? It was like a half of six centimeters or something.
It was like nothing. It was Kevin Durant's toe on the line. They literally were a toe on the line.
The oversized shoes that he wears.
Right. So that's why I don't necessarily call the Nets a failure. I mean, I know the Bucks went on to win the whole thing, and that's awesome. And Giannis had an amazing final series. I'm not trying to take that away from anybody, but I push back on the idea that the Nets were necessarily a failure because they literally were a toe away from advancing. If Kevin Durant's two is a three, that game is over. The Nets go. Now, do they win the championship? I mean, I don't know, but they almost made it to the finals based on that 1-3. Which, speaking of the finals, We're already calling a Nets and Lakers finals, which, of course, why we do this now is silly. But I understand why we want to see a Lakers-Nets finals, because of the interpersonal dynamics of the two teams. You do have LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, that whole dynamic after it ended in Cleveland. You do have Kevin Durant, who has jumped around, his old teammate with Russell Westbrook. Obviously, James Harden's in the mix there, too.
There's no love lost between Durant and Westbrook at this point.
There is not. There is not, because you remember Westbrook basically got to bask in the glow of staying, essentially, after Kevin Durant
at
left
OKC
in Oklahoma City before he ended up in Washington. So those dynamics are also at play, too. I'm not denying the desire to see that finals matchup. That actually would be spicy. Very entertaining about that. But we do this all the time in the NBA where we put this team on paper and we automatically assume, yep, that's it. I mean, Stephen A. Smith was doing that on ESPN last night on the draft coverage where the Lakers' window with Westbrook is still open even though they had an injury-riddled season last year.
I think 2 years. I think they'd have two seasons. You know, Russell Westbrook will be 33 next season, 34 the season after that. But let's be very, very clear. He is a superstar. He's a superstar talent. Make no mistake about it. Anthony Davis, when healthy, is a superstar, one of the top five players on the planet. But his durability is a question mark. And we all know that LeBron James is one of the top two players on the planet. I don't care what Giannis or anybody else is doing. We know how great that is. And so this would definitely be a trio to be reckoned with. But still, Brooklyn would have something to say about it. To a lesser degree, Milwaukee would have something to say about it. If the Clippers stayed together and everybody was healthy, they'd have something to say about it. So there would be teams in both conferences that would try to be roadblocks, and they'd have a legitimate chance. But there is no question if this deal goes through, it would be a significant upgrade for the Los Angeles Lakers, and they would clearly be one of the favorites, if not the favorite, to win it all, because you had some people having them as the favorite last year when it was just LeBron and Anthony Davis. Imagine if Russell Westbrook was in that lineup.
That was Stephen A. Smith on ESPN, his reaction to the Lakers acquiring Russell Westbrook from the Washington Wizards. Meanwhile, Kendrick Perkins had a less measured response on ESPN. You know, Stephen A. is just kind of looking at this from the perspective, okay, yeah, you know, 2 year window, here's what they add, et cetera. Perkins is all in, man. All in.
Oh, I'm betting my house on them. They're going to win it all. You know why? Because LeBron James has did something in these last 2 years far as being in the Laker uniform, and that's he has added and adjusted his game. We're watching him now as he's becoming more of a guy that could play off the ball, a spot-up shooter. And we already know how Russell Westbrook is going to impose his will. Can you imagine Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis in a pick and roll? How can you stop that? With Anthony Davis rolling to the basket, being a live threat at the rim, Russell Westbrook, the most athletic point guard in today's game, the most athletic point guard to ever play in the NBA, coming at you with a head of steam, good luck.
That was Kendrick Perkins on the ESPN broadcast after Russell Westbrook was traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. I do love this type of stuff. Like, how are you going to stop? As Bomani Jones has joked with us, and we're going to talk to Bomani Jones later today. He's like, why do we act like, is this a thing where people like forget they've watched a bunch of basketball before? Like, we do this all the time. Staying healthy is obviously the biggest thing. You cannot predict that. I would hope that after a full off season and getting back into a normal, non-compacted schedule, these things will help out. But it kind of gets back to your point about what the Brooklyn Nets managed to do. Manage minutes during the regular season, try to figure it out as you go, and then turn it on once the playoffs start.
It's going to help on that front. And here's another one, Joe. Russell Westbrook has never won the NBA title before. Came close with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Yep. Came close with Houston the year with Harden, and Chris Paul got injured. I mean, I think they would have beaten the Warriors and then went on to win the championship that year. Didn't work out that way. They now have a player in Russell Westbrook who has that hunger. I'm not saying that the Lakers weren't hungry last year, but it is different when you're chasing it, which Anthony Davis was 2 years ago, chasing his first ring. You know, it's unbelievable everything LeBron James has done.
Mm-hmm.
And his staying power has been incredible, given every obstacle that has been in his way. We don't love these concepts of super teams, and quite frankly, I thought the 2020 title would be LeBron James's last in the NBA.
Yeah.
I did, but this was a great move, obviously, by the Lakers to revitalize him in such a way now that we're going to go into next season with them as the favorites.
I referenced that Cole Beasley some heat, Julio.
Oh.
Heat. Put it on. Got the internets blowing up. Rand, can we hear this real quick? So this is Buffalo.
Has it been sanitized?
This is Buffalo Bills wide receiver Cole Beasley, who is the most outspoken of the NFL anti-vaxxers. And I guess the best way that he's tired of talking to the media, so he's just letting the art do the work for him.
So going crazy. Swing and I swing and I swing and I swung. I don't pop the trunk. I came in a truck. I'm a country m- grew up playing in the mud. Learned it at an early age. Never played with a gun. The whole world can with no hands. They all love to see me fall.
No
like the seam of those pants. Kill you with opinions. Disagreed and go ham. The sense of me would be like trying to cover me with no hands. Not a chance in a couple million. Y'all change the colors that's around you like you a chameleon. If D.I.D. is red and so is having fucking feelings, I'ma be bees to the day the legal come to kill them. They ain't fucking with me.
That's Cole Beasley, wide receiver for the Bills. If I didn't know any better, I thought that would be a bit from FX's Dave that features rapper Little Dicky, which is actually a very good show.
That's really good.
That's a really good show. I highly recommend that show. Bomani Jones, ESPN, Right Time is the podcast, now joins us.
You didn't lead Bo into that, did you?
Bo, what up?
Don't insult Lil Dicky like that. Lil Dicky can like legitimately
rap.
What I'm saying is you're right. You're absolutely right. What I'm saying is if you watch the show, there are some like intentionally bad raps to get the point across if you watch the show. Now, Lil Dicky himself, like if you actually listen to his stuff, the dude can freaking rap, but I felt like it was one of these weird send-ups that he does on the show from time to time. So that's what it sounded like to me.
Okay, just making sure. He's a weirdo rapping savant. Like I've never quite known how I felt about it, but he can actually rap.
I've seen some of his freestyles. Now Cole Beasley, not so much. But hey, man, he just had to get out of his system. That's the answers for all the stuff he's been dealing with. How did Cole Beasley become the face of this NFL anti-vax thing?
Because he decided to be like he let everybody know how he felt about this. And the thing about these cats is they don't realize they all sound stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just come out here and say whatever. And I don't think it ever dawned on him that people would hear him and be like, actually, dude, you sound stupid.
Bomani Jones, ESPN, joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Obvious. I'm Joe Giulio. I was going to say, Joe, he became the voice because he said he's a 9-year NFL veteran and that he felt like there are people in the league who don't, players in the league who don't want to be vaccinated, but they don't want to speak up about it for fear of the backlash.
The backlash.
Or they're in a position where they're trying to make a team.
Yeah, Cole Beasley's.
And they would get cut.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why he felt it was imperative for him to be the voice of this movement, but that's how we got here.
And that's how he's dropping heat on YouTube.
I mean,
not really. Bomani Jones, ESPN, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giulio. I'm Joe Ovias. So I did not expect this week that the quarterback who did not show up to camp on time would be the rookie for the New York Jets over what I assumed were very like easy contracts to negotiate. That's why the CBA was written the way it was written for first round draft picks. There's a scale to this kind of stuff, but the Jets found a way to get very, very in their feels about deferred money. So Zach Wilson just now starts to show up after getting signed. And it was Aaron Rodgers who actually showed up on time to the Green Bay Packers. I did not predict that one. For all the time we spent talking about Aaron Rodgers, I felt like he was going to get some sort of concession. And the only real concession that he got was they voided the contract in 2023. He's still on contract for 2022. So I get that the Aaron Rodgers press conference this week was this, like, oh, man, he's really just, like, airing it out. He's really letting you know how he feels about the Packers, which I appreciated. But then I also wondered to myself, what exactly did he get that he wanted other than the voiding of the 2023 contract? Bomani Jones, ESPN, back on with us right now. So what did Aaron Rodgers get out of the last 3 months other than the voiding of the 2023 contract?
I mean, this is the last year he's going to be there. He got that, and he got Randall Cobb, which he cares a lot more about than, honestly, I think anybody else would. But I think at the end of this year, it's a wrap, and okay, that's what he got out of this.
Because the impression that both the Packers and Aaron Rodgers gave is that all they said they would agree to a conversation at the end of the year. But it felt nebulous in the way they said that. Like if they go out there and get to a Super Bowl, is that it? You know, like maybe he does come back for another year. Maybe cooler heads have prevailed if you win. I just found it very nebulous, and I was curious.
Yeah, well, I just don't think they could come out and be like, all right, boys, this is it.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was not an option to share with the public that this is going to be the end. But I think that the only way this goes the way it did is if this is going to be the end. And I think it will.
And meanwhile, he actually shows up to camp on time and Zach Wilson doesn't because the Jets are amazing.
Yeah, what is the holdup there?
Deferred money. I mean, I guess NFL teams found a way to still not be happy with the things they actually wanted. Because I was always under the assumption that after the whole Sam Bradford thing and the escalating contracts that rookie QBs were getting and it was breaking the bank, the CBA changes, and I just kind of assumed that the first round has a way about it. There's a scale. But now teams that really want to be stingy about it are getting in on deferred money, and the players are like, no, we want this money now, signing bonuses and things like that. They just find ways to want to break the back of a player.
Yeah, and I just – we've seen a few contracts go this way with the deferred money, like Joey Bosa, I think, is an obvious example where this went all the way down the line. And what it seems like is one team is trying to be the one that can change, but the paradigm is, and all the agents are staying on the same kid.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not going for this. And I don't think they've broken anybody of consequence and gotten them to actually come back because of this, especially in a situation with like a quarterback where the Jets need him to be there more than he needs to be there.
Yes. They had no other. Was it Mike White and who was the other guy with their other quarterbacks?
Somebody from Florida International.
FIU? All right.
But Monty Jones joining us here on the OG. But let's switch to the NBA. I can't keep track here. Are we going to hold Russell Westbrook joining a super team via trade, albeit, against him since he was so outspoken against Kevin Durant? Or did he work around the margins here because it was a trade?
Well, I think the thing about this is adding Russell Westbrook does not make you a super team.
Yeah.
And the Lakers, as they stand currently, are not a super team. Like, I don't really understand this move for the Lakers unless there's something else that's going on that we just haven't heard about. Otherwise, this just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. He doesn't seem to fill any of the weaknesses that they have. I think I saw Matt Moore make a good point that he does kind of reaffirm some of their strengths, but I don't know how helpful it is for them to do this. Other than I think there's something to the idea that they made these moves they made in part because they needed to get Kuzma and Trestle out of there. Like, time was up on both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what the big benefit is. But I thought it was a very strange move for the Lakers to make.
Could
I do think it helps Anthony Davis. I will say that. If he's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, he can, but Russell Westbrook's been in the league now for 13 years. Like, I don't know what anybody is reasonable. And I am the king of the Russell Westbrook fan club. Like, I am all about Russ. I wouldn't trade for him, though. Like, a big part of why I like Russ so much is that I've never cared whether or not his team won or lost a single game ever. If I had an investment, I might have to change my whole approach.
Yeah. I don't think the Lakers gave up a lot to get him. This is a classic, I'm going to trade you three dimes, you know, for a quarter. Like, yeah, I'll take the quarter.
Yeah, I mean, they do still have to pay him a lot of money for whatever that's worth. That money ain't mine, but it seems as though that might make things harder for something else you might want to do, maybe.
Speaking of money, Bob Bowlsby, commissioner of the Big 12, is very upset because he's going to watch his conference get, like, essentially dissolve because of what's happening this week with Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC. That's all becoming more and more official. Can you even talk about like what Bob Bowlsby?
I don't think that's a very good
probably
idea.
Yeah, probably not a good idea. All right, so I'm gonna move on from that.
I will tell you, this is what I will say in general terms.
Okay, all right.
Television money is what drives everything in this, and college football is this nebulous connection of like a consolidation of these conferences and just really just a bunch of television deals. Like, that's what these conferences are, a bunch of people who negotiate your television deals for you. The people who have the money off of the television, it wouldn't surprise me if they offer their input to different people in the course of that. But that is a general statement that would apply to any situation kind of similar to this. But I applaud you for even going with, do you think you can talk about this? You know, good. Oh, boy, I almost said something I can't say. You know damn well I can't do that.
Well, because it's not like ESPN hasn't made a comment on it. That's why I was curious.
Oh, they have? I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I've been a little busy with something else. I didn't know if they made a comment on it. Well, guess what? That's what we think, boss. I guess that's what we think. I got nothing for you, Jack.
Bomani Jones, ESPN.
Don't do that to Bo. Come on.
I'm not Bo's nose. I'm not.
Hold on. He ain't gonna do it to me because I ain't gonna do it to me.
Right.
The last thing I'm about to do is mess up my money so I could do Joe Ovius a favor. Don't get me wrong. Thanks for everything. But I'm wise enough, baby. I'm wise enough.
Bo, how long have I known you now?
I know. That's what I'm saying. I know.
So that's why it's like, I know you're not going to do anything to mess with that money. That's why I was like, I'll just kind of bring it up that way. So
Yeah. No, I got faith in you. I got faith in you. At the same time, you know, E for effort, T for nice try. You know what I'm saying?
Bomani Jones joining us here on the OG. All right, you know what? Let's get off of that for a second and actually talk about this other thing that you're doing. You're going to be – okay, so explain this Bob Costas show you're on HBO.
All right. Actually, I just got back from recording. It is back on the record with Bob Costas. He had a show a few years ago called On the Record with Bob Costas, and they brought that back around. And it's going to be kind of a commentary show, I guess would be the best way to put it. The first, we got an interview with Charles Barkley. There's an interview with Ali Raisman that I think is really, really good. A roundtable discussion with me, Renee Montgomery, and David Cohn. And also, I do an essay, kind of like a parting shot of sorts, and kind of talk to Bob about it after it's done.
Can you tease what your parting shot is?
I'll tell you what the topic is.
My parting shot is.
The amazing con that's been run by the NCAA. Shout out to my man Jay Hemphill. We were talking about this a few weeks ago, that everybody's all excited about name, image, and likeness. The NCAA still ain't cutting a check to these players. They the ones making all the money off the TV and everything else, and we just still riding by while they don't actually cut a check, give any share of the TV money to the people who make it.
Well, people are very excited that like a Meteos is sponsoring some football players at NC State, right?
Yeah, like that kind of thing, right? And it's good for the players that they can get some extra money. But, like, that's the topic that I tackle, and Bob tries to give me a little pushback. And, you know, I guess I got to respect anybody that's willing to try to do something like that.
It's a shot of Bo to go.
A little different than shot of Joe to go.
Yeah.
Which is what your parting shot is here on the OG from time to time. Okay, well, speaking of name, image, and likeness, because Jillio and I were actually talking about this a little bit yesterday when we kind of had this moment of clarity of, oh, crap, the NBA draft is tonight. And, oh, crap.
We don't know anybody in the draft.
What? Oh, that's right. Jalen Johnson played at Duke for like a hot minute. Totally forgot about that. With name, image, and likeness, do you envision a scenario when things kind of get back to normal? We don't have weird COVID basketball seasons, although knock on wood, given the rate that things are going right now, that you might actually see a little bit of a return of players going to the brand. Because that was the big takeaway yesterday. The brands of college basketball did not have immediate impact in the draft, even Duke.
Yeah.
One Kentucky, one Duke, one Carolina, first round.
Yeah, I'm just very curious to see how much money some of these basketball players are actually going to get and where that money comes from. Because where I think it's going to wind up being different from football is, I think these football dudes are going to get a lot of their money just from local businesses. These basketball dudes are going to be able to get a different kind of money.
Yeah.
They got a different kind of fame and visibility. It's not just going to be like, I mean, as an example, like, I don't know if Top of the Hill is sponsoring anybody, for example, but you know what I mean? Like that ain't going to be what it is with these basketball players. They're going to have access to a different kind of money and bigger checks walking in the door. And so, look, if you can go play college basketball and get you some hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe even $1 million, then, yeah, there are going to be some guys that decide they're going to go ahead and do it.
Do you think that playing college basketball, and we'll use the larger brands, Duke, Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas, that stratosphere of college basketball, do you think that that's better for a prospect than going to the G League?
I don't know. And I've been trying to figure this out, too, because I think that the best way for college basketball to keep itself relevant, afloat, like whatever term that you choose to use, is to demonstrate yourself as the best way to develop guys to go to the pros. Now, I think what college basketball really going to need to do is learn how to really, like, explain to the not so good players that this is the best place to be developed to go to the pros, right? The guys that ain't going to be ready right away, and this is going to take a little bit more time. I don't know if they're ever going to be able to really demonstrate that to the high level guys, that this is the best place for you to go to become an NBA player. That's what Cal was able to sell for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think Krzyzewski, when he still had the glow of Team USA, yeah, that was what he was able to explain to you. It's like, hey, Matt, we're going to get you ready in a way that nobody else can. That's going to be their only chance at getting like the really excellent players to come, is I can get you ready for the league, because they're going to get to the league regardless.
Yeah, it's slipping away, Bo, because Jalen Green and John Kuminga last night, two of the top seven picks were G League guys.
Yeah, yeah. And look, here's my thing. I personally would much rather spend a year hanging out in college than spend a year wherever the hell they are for the season.
Yeah, that's always been my argument. That's always been
doubt about that.
That's always been my argument. I understand your point about getting the league and everything else, but like
his point is development, though, and I don't think there's any question. No, you're better off in the G League as a development.
As a development, right? I understand that perspective of it, but you're still 18 freaking years old.
Sure.
And not only can you use the marketing, the codependency on marketing, because that's one thing that Duke did a really good job of as they started to shift towards Kentucky, is like, all right, let's combine brands, we'll elevate you elevate us, everything's good. And you, as you mentioned, the glow of USA basketball, it all worked together to get Duke kind of back on this track. I mean, you combine all that, you throw name, image, and likeness. I mean, I don't know about you, if I'm 18 and the big man on campus, I would like to be in a college campus, enjoy college, being around my peers, because I can't imagine the slog of a G League schedule and where you actually go.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's anybody to really explain that to these guys.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I was in high school, my brother told me, my brother took 5 years to get through college, and he did it on purpose. And he told me, my brother's 13 years older than me. And he was like, look, man, I knew I was never going to have as much fun as I was in college. Like, he knew it right then and there, and that's why he did it. I had somebody tell me that. I don't know how it goes if you don't have somebody to tell you that, but I'm with you. I would not – part of what's interesting with this, with the basketball players, is they are on a completely different schedule from the rest of their generation, in the sense that the rest of their generation never wants to be adults.
Yeah.
And these guys are running to it way faster than I think they have to.
Yeah, we're seeing it with like the overtime select, the website that pumps out highlights and things like that. I mean, those aren't they starting at high school at this point?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, man, I just don't – it doesn't sound like fun to me. But, hey – That's the direction things are headed. That's unfortunate for at least this area, because we enjoy college basketball so much. But Monty Jones, catch him on HBO with Back on the Record with Bob Costas. Obviously, ESPN, Right Time is the podcast.
By the way, 11 p.m. Eastern on Back on the Record with Bob Costas will also be streaming after on HBO Max.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because I'm a young, relatively young person who actually watches things through apps now, you know?
Yeah, and you got kids, dog. I understand. I can't expect you to stay up to no 11 o'clock.
Hey, pandemic me on a Friday night. Let's go. Come on, Bomani. All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Be good.
I will fully admit that I have been way too deep on college realignment this week. So a lot of other stuff in the world of sports has just kind of come into my radar, and I go, oh, okay. So I know it's Major League Baseball trade deadline, and I think what I said to you, Julia, was, hold up. The Dodgers got Trey Turner and Max Scherzer?
Both.
Are they going to still play baseball in Washington?
I don't. They traded Kyle Schwarber, too. I mean, they're just pretty much dumping every piece of salary that they have.
Okay, because I know the Cubs have been getting a lot of attention as of late, because it's the further dismantling of the World Series team and what could have been, you know, could they have won more World Series, all that kind of stuff. Like, I get that level. And when you see windows close, you're going to do these autopsies on what happened. Washington, though, okay, that came out of nowhere. I had no idea you wanted to go in a different direction.
They have their ring.
Yeah, okay, fine. So be it. Time to move on. Let's talk to Trey Turner's old college baseball coach, Elliot Avin, NC State head baseball coach, joining us now on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. Coach, how are you?
Fine. How you doing, Joe?
We're doing good. So I guess, look, you've been around baseball a long time, and front offices are going to front office, and it's kind of wild to see these big deals. A lot of movement, and Trey is a part of that. So have you talked to him about the nature of baseball, the business of getting moved?
No, we talk a lot, and I leave him alone during the season because he's got a lot of things going on. When you get downtime, you enjoy downtime. But I've texted with him the last few days, and anyway, I know he's probably, you know, anxious about this move and see what happens. I don't even know if it's been finalized. I guess they got till 4 o'clock today. So I haven't even heard. I've been I'm out watching an old friend of mine, Matt Holliday's son, take batting practice and spending some time with Matt. We're catching up. And so I hadn't even heard that it's been finalized yet. So
NC State baseball coach Elliot Avent joining us here on the OG. And I imagine you're slightly conflicted over this, A, because you are a Yankees fan. And I know you were okay with Trey's success in Washington, but I got to think maybe there's still a part of you that doesn't really love the Dodgers. Or is it the Red Sox that you'd prefer him not
to
see him play for?
No. Joe, you've known me from a long time ago. I used to be a Yankee fan. I grew up Yankees. My dad loved the Yankees. He watched every game the Yankees ever played up until, you know, he left us this January. And so I've watched many a Yankee game with my dad. And one of my biggest thrills in life was, you know, A-Rod flew me and my dad out to Yankee Stadium the year it first went to the new Yankee Stadium. And George Steinbrenner's daughter showed my dad around the entire stadium, every nook and cranny. And that's one of the highlights of my life. And so I'll always, the Yankees will always have a special part of my life. But now I just kind of pull for players. And I haven't really pulled for a team unless it's a team that, like, I pull for the White Sox, pull for the Cardinals, and pull for pull for the Nats. But now it looks like I'm a Dodger fan.
Elliot Avent, NC State baseball coach, joining us here on the OG. Elliot, you've been busy, man, and I don't want to talk about the College World Series, but you did USA Baseball this summer. How did that go?
I love that. You know, as tough as this spring's been in so many ways, and what our players did to get me through a really tough time this spring with what happened in Omaha and the feelings that enacted, then being around the players on Team USA was really good for me to get back on that horse and do what I love to do. So that was a lot of fun.
NC State baseball coach Elliot Avent joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Avias. I'm Joe Giglio. Actually, I lied, E. I got one question about the College World Series for you, and that is, who surprised you that reached out to you after everything ended in Omaha?
Because
I'm sure your phone was just flooded.
I still got like 685 texts, and I don't have many emails, and I don't respond to everybody in time. But I'm not a good phone person, it's when you go through I remember when my dad passed. So many wonderful people reached out that I loved. I read every text, but it was something about answering those texts that had a bit of finality to it.
Yeah.
That kept me from answering texts. It's been the same way with this World Series thing. So many wonderful people have reached out from wherever, from whenever in my life, and they've all been special. But to put one above the other, I can't really say. They've all been special in their own right.
Coach, I'm not going to lie. 600 some odd, that's like the little badge on the phone, right? And it says 600. That would give me anxiety. I'm not going to lie.
Well, it doesn't give me anxiety.
All right,
you know,
all right.
There's been days I'd like to take this phone and maybe see if I can throw it for like a short par three or something like that, or maybe a 55-foot putt or something, see if I can sink it. But it's like today's society, you can't get away from the phone.
Yeah.
And I think some days we need to.
If I see like three on my little badge, I'm like, oh, geez, I got to respond to text all of a sudden. Elliot Avent joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I am Joe Ovias. So I am curious, though. Giglio had asked, you know, if anybody surprised you, but let's get back on campus. Because what happened, I'm guessing other coaches were curious about in the process and everything else, because there's an upcoming football season going on. You know, like,
right.
Has Dave Doran talked to you about that process? I mean, who knows? Maybe Nick Saban wants to know, hey, man, like, what do we have to know? Because, I mean, you guys kind of went through this before the football season starts up, because they're going to be going through this too.
Yeah, I actually, Dave Doran and I are really good friends, and I got a lot of respect for what he's done for the program here, and we talk a lot during the season, and actually we were together about probably a week or 10 days ago, something like that, maybe a week ago. And I actually went and spoke to his team about what we went through in Omaha and, you know, what happened. And, you know, not really necessarily encouraging them, but just, you know, letting them know what happened, educating them on the process. And as always, I feel like those guys can make their own decisions, but he did have me come speak to his team.
Elliot Avent, NC State's baseball coach, joining us here on the OG. All right, I'm going to give you one positive from the College World Series. You got the slobbering wolf into the rotation somehow.
Yes.
I know you worked very long and hard on that. I don't want to get you in trouble, but I know that had to be satisfying for you as a guy who started at NC State in the fall of 1974. I know that logo means a lot to you, and I'm sure it's been satisfying for you to see it now as part of the actual school rotation.
The 70s as far as a lot I was concerned with the glory years and the heyday of NC State athletics, there was very little we didn't win in the 70s, and the slobbering wolf was our deal. And I know Monty Tao and I both have wanted that thing back for a long time, and I was tickled to death to see that thing come out on the helmets.
Elliot Avent, head coach, NC State, joining us here on the OG. We appreciate the time. And, yes, the slobbering wolf on the helmet.
Nice.
With the brick background, too, that's a good look. One of those has to be in your office now, because, as Julio pointed out, we're pretty sure you're the reason why that thing's on a helmet.
I'll see if Dave can give me one. But I'm looking forward to the football season, as a lot of people are. And I hope y'all are doing well. It's good talking to y'all, as always.
Coach, appreciate the time. Elliot Avent.
Right, thanks a lot, guys.
NFL training camps have opened up. Hey, shout out to the Jets. They finally signed their rookie QB. They made what should not be a difficult process difficult. Deferred money, man.
Sometimes I wonder if the Jets and Mets share a brain.
It's one cell. One brain cell. But, yeah, congrats to the Jets. You finally got your man. He could finally show up to camp after camp already started. Who would have thought that it would be Zach Wilson who would not be at a training camp, and Aaron Rodgers would be at a training camp the first week? Man, the Jets continue to just clown shoes of an organization. How about to a camp that seems pretty chill right now? The Carolina Panthers training camp in Wofford. Darren Gant, Panthers.com, joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group. Darren, what's up, man?
Hey, man, we're just living the dream down here in bucolic Spartanburg. It's a garden spot, I tell you.
How many training camps have you been to in Spartanburg?
All of them, right?
All of them? Yeah, I mean, I was in full-time at all of them. I was in and out when I was working at PFT from time to time. But, yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, we were talking, Steve Reed and I from the AP were talking about the 95 camp when, you know, Dom's got them out there going two-a-days in this kind of heat. And it's just like, how long have we spent here? And it's a lot of time. But, yeah, it's a different vibe, though, now. I mean, it really is relaxed with, you know, first of all, Wofford's changed. I mean, I'm standing outside this art center on campus, and they have Chihulis. They have these massive Dale Chihuly art pieces, and it's culture, and there are bars downtown serving microbrews. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the Spartanburg experience for this month. I think everybody should do it once in their life.
Darren Gant joining us here on the OG. That's Jovius. I'm Joe Giglio. All right, Darren, we made fun of the Jets. Their former quarterback is now with the Carolina Panthers. And here's my question for you. I'm counting 50 turnovers and 38 career NFL starts. That suggests a pattern to me.
That's too many.
How does Matt Rhule break that pattern with Sam Darnold?
Well, you hope by surrounding him by non-Jets. I think that's the simple fact here. And, I mean, I know it's easy to clown on the Jets, but they've earned it. And, you know, I try not to hold Jetsness against anyone. I talked to Josh McCown about this earlier in the offseason. He was with Sam, you know, in New York his rookie year when Sam looked okay. And, you know, it's just hard for me with all the dysfunction that's followed the Jets and Adam Gase to just say, hey, this is all his fault. You hope that the answer is – let him dump it off to Christian McCaffrey. Let him throw it to DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson. And maybe Dan Arnold, who's like one of those surprise guys of training camp so far. You hope that surrounding him with a better grade of player and what I think could be a pretty good defense. I mean, I understand wanting to talk about Sam. He's a topic. Quarterback always drives
drives the conversation. But if the Panthers are in good this year, it's going to be because they've put together what could be a top 10 defense. They've got a lot of dudes over there. And, you know, if you take away some of the burden of expectation, you don't have to be the savior. We're not expecting you to be the third overall pick. We're expecting you to not screw it up mm-hmm. for what could be a pretty good defense with great skill position talent around you. You know, they feel like that's something he can pull off. They've lowered the bar is what they've done, and they hope he can clear it.
You know, that's brilliant, because I mean, that was kind of the attitude we took with Giglio when he came over to the radio side. He says, we just
got to manage expectations.
Yeah, let's lower the bar of what you expect at a sports talk radio. And man, we're really going to surprise some people.
So when he came on the air and spoke English, to win!
Hey! And didn't swear.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
It's early yet.
I know. Knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood on that one. Darren Gant, Panthers.com, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. Before we get back to the football particular matters, it is a storyline that's going to be here throughout the season, and that is COVID vaccination rates with the Panthers. Now, I know you cannot speak to specifics on these matters, but I am curious, what seemed to be the change within the organization? I mean, meanwhile, you got Ron Rivera with the Washington football team, who can't get his players to get vaccinated for an immunocompromised head coach.
Yep.
Yet the Panthers have gone in the opposite direction and went from some, I would call, unfortunate headlines with Sam Darnold to, hey, we got one of the highest vaccination rates in the NFL. What happened?
Well, I think by and large, and I've heard a number of different excuses and rationalizations for why a lot of guys waited. And the one thing that seems to carry, you know, at least some degree of twisted logic for me is a lot of players heard about, okay, well, people have side effects after the second dose and they feel bad for a couple of days. And if I'm competing for a job, I don't want that to be during minicamp.
Yeah.
So a lot of them thought they would wait until after minicamp. My response to that is, why didn't you do it in March? You know, 2 months before, you know, you had to come to a minicamp when it was widely and regularly available to you. There's a couple people who are, you know, have their philosophies, and some of them are just hard heads and some of them have actual reasons. But by and large, the Carolina Panthers are a vaccinated team. And, you know, I think they did a good job presenting information to guys to help them make an educated decision. But let's be honest, this is a young roster that's been turned over almost completely. Mm-hmm. There are only, I think, 17 guys on this roster who have ever even been to a camp in Spartanburg, which only takes you back 2 years. So, you know, when there's not a lot of automatic job security, a lot of these young guys on the bubble who are trying to be on a 53 are going to do whatever they got to do to hang around. And, you know, around here, you know, if the jobs aren't secure, you're going to do what you can do to put yourself in a better position. You know, most of the guys, and I've talked to a couple kind of who don't want to be out there publicly, but guys who probably wouldn't have gotten vaccinated, except they know it makes them easier to cut. And it makes it, you know, the arguments for making your life easier by being able to take the team plane or go out to eat with people or not have to wear a mask didn't resonate with some of the people. And, you know, but a lot of guys were, you know, late deciders, and they look around and see the situation and realize, yeah, this is not worth it to me anymore. But some, like Denzel Perriman today, I mean, Denzel made a big production out of getting a mask and coming over and doing his interview today, wearing a mask and telling us all about why he wasn't going to take the vaccine, didn't matter what. And, you know, lots of luck to you, Denzel. Hope you stay well. So everybody around you stays well. But anyway, I mean,
nobody's
largely vaccinated.
Nobody's dropped a rap track.
Nobody's
gone full Cole Beasley, which we'll play a little bit later on.
Right. And you know what? I mean, I think Cole Beasley, here's the thing. Football coaches don't want their teams to have outbreaks of COVID-19. Football coaches more want their team to not have distractions, because distractions are the worst thing you can have if you're a football team. And so I think that's the challenge Sean McDermott's got to deal with is, you know, I'm sure there's some people in Buffalo who, you know, agree with Cole Beasley, but I'm sure there are a lot of Buffalo Bills who wish Cole Beasley would shut the heck up. And I almost pulled a Giglio there. But, you know, I just think, you know, because it became a politicized issue, some people are going to get dug in and some people are just going to do what they want to do. But by and large, it's been a non-issue here because even some of the guys who wouldn't say out loud they were vaccinated. And, you know, I think a lot of guys didn't want to put themselves out there or throw teammates under the bus or anything like that. Some didn't want to make a big deal out of it. Some didn't want to take it, but it made their life easier. And, you know, here we are. I think the report suggested that the Panthers are well over 90% vaccinated, and you can do your own math and tell how many guys that leaves.
Yeah.
Darren Gant joining us here on the OG. That's Jovius. I'm Joe Giulio. Darren, this may be a thinly veiled fantasy football question since I know you're an expert at fielding such things. I really like Tommy Tremble, the Notre Dame tight end that the Panthers drafted in the third round. Is he going to be somebody you think, as a newcomer, that kind of helps in a position of need for this offense?
We see. I always refer all fantasy football questions to Jonathan Jones. He loves.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Jonathan Jones of CBSSports.com loves fantasy questions. Yes.
Yeah,
I prefaced it as such. I mean,
stuff, and he's an expert, so I usually send those his way. It would not suggest that Tommy Tremble would be the tight end to do it. I mentioned Dan Arnold earlier. I mean, I think he's a guy, and, you know, I hesitate because I've seen the training camp all-stars so often, and I've seen him at multiple positions. But Dan Arnold looks like a guy they've got a plan for. He's a big, tall guy, can get down the middle of the field, moves pretty well. And, you know, he's caught some passes, and he's never been in a position where he was the guy. He's got the opportunity to be the guy here. And if any of those tight ends were going to be a significant contributor in a fantasy football operation, I would say Arnold would probably be my pick instead of Tremble.
Darren Gant, Panthers.com. All right, man, have fun at training camp. And
it's the best. You should come down and join us.
Hey, come out to Spartanburg. Have a few laughs. We've done it a couple of times, and now that I've checked that off my list, I think I'm good.
No, you seriously, it's the best. You get to drive by the Peachoid on the way down. It's one of my favorite landmarks in America, right up there south of the border. You know, it's something about this state. It changes a man.
Fair enough. Darren Gant, Panthers.com. Have a good weekend, man.
See y'all.
This is a story that I will admit blindsided me, and I think it's also blindsided a lot of people within the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. There was a meeting between the NCHSAA and state senators about this bill, HB 91, which would replace the North Carolina High School Athletic Association with a new commission in time for the 2022-23 school year. A 17-person commission would be appointed by the governor, the state senate, and the state house. Now, House Bill 91 was originally a bill about students with autism, and it was amended in the Senate Committee on Education and replaced with language that would dissolve the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. And again, a commission selected by the governor and both chambers of the NCGA would be set up to govern a high school sports committee for those later school years. As with most things, the root of this is money. And the North Carolina High School Athletic Association sitting on like 40-some-odd million dollars that the government feels like, well, wait a minute, why do you have all this money? Now, the NCHSAA argues this money is used for a variety of different reasons. Athletic directors at various high schools have been against this. Nick Stevens over at highschoolot.com actually did a survey, and only like 5% of the ADs polled said they were okay with this. It was overwhelmingly negative to get rid of the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. And then recently this week, the Triangle Basketball Officials Association released a statement expressing an opposition to this bill that would dissolve the High School Athletic Association and replace it with that commission. Joining us right now on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline is one of those officials, I believe 117 basketball officials who signed off on this letter opposing this. Steve Schwartz joins us now on the OG. Steve, how are you?
Hi, guys. It was great to hear a parody of an Ambrosia song on the program. That's a highlight moment. I would hope you would get that in a time capsule and bury it in the Azalea Gardens over at Channel 5. It was very well done.
We're going to put that on a cassette tape and put it in the time capsule. Absolutely.
Very strong move.
So
it's been yacht rock.
It's yacht rock week, man. Yacht rock week. So why do officials have an opinion on what happens with the High School Athletic Association?
Well, officials are impacted by this move as well. And, you know, in all of the conversation, no one has ever addressed what happens with us. You know, we've been governed by the North Carolina High School Athletic Association for its 108 years. I'm a 35-year member of the North Carolina High School Athletic Association and in the local association. There's 275 of us, and there's probably 6,500 referees across all sports for prep athletics in the state. Well, who's going to manage us? Who will lead us? Who will train us? Who will insure us? And then where's the level of accountability? I mean, right now we trust the North Carolina High School Athletic Association because they have a deep history on positively managing us. Does the government take that over? I mean, we're all independent contractors. We work for ourselves in this environment. And there are, as you guys have noted repeatedly on your show, and as you did in the open, there are fewer and fewer people willing to officiate. There's a group of us. We refer to ourselves as the Just One More Year Club, where the regional supervisors come to us when we float that, hey, maybe it's time for us to move on and do something else with our season. We're like, can you give us one more year? And we understand that because no one wants to officiate any longer. The pay is not great. The abuse is pretty substantial. But we're supported by the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. We love that relationship, so we all come back. Well, this completely disrupts that relationship. And no one has addressed us directly, and quite honestly, we don't, much like coaches and ADs and the surveys that Nick did at High School OT, we don't like this because we're going to be negatively impacted by it.
Steve Schwartz joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Obvious. I'm Joe Giglio. And Steve, you mentioned 35 years. I was going to say, I'm sure there's no magic bullet, because if there was, you'd figure it out by now. But how do you attract more officials to become more involved in high school sports?
It's been set up in a manner where we recruit officials and they don't stay very long because of, generally because of the of fan abuse, and that happens, and we all know, as those of us who are sports fans, all of us know that's across all sports, and we have to teach young people how to do that. There are excellent intramural programs at Duke, NC State, and UNC that we will partner with, and we do partner with, to recruit. There are natural constituencies of professions that lend to great officials, like law enforcement and military people. And we have to do a better job at getting out there and recruiting them. And we always have done that to replenish a supply of the older officials who feel it's time to move on. That will become substantially harder if the North Carolina High School Athletic Association goes away, because they help guide us there. They're creative. They're innovative thinkers. We trust them. If the government takes this over, and we believe that if HB 91 passes, the government will take it over. I mean, it'll be the commission, but they're answerable to those politicians. We will lose that guidance, and we will lose that innovation. And then we fear that during the season, what influence will politicians have on how we call games, how we administer the rules of the game?
Steve Schwartz, longtime Triangle High School basketball official, Triangle Basketball Officials Association, releasing a statement earlier this week expressing their opposition of HB1, which would dissolve the North Carolina High School Athletic Association and replace it with a commission appointed by elected leaders. Wait, Steve, are you saying that local officials get heavily involved with how high schools win or lose games? No.
Here's the hypothetical. Okay, here's what we fear.
Okay.
Something like this could happen. If I'm officiating a game at a school and a player takes a swing at another player but doesn't make contact or curses me, my rule, as set from the North Carolina High School Athletic Association and the National Federation of High Schools, that's an ejection. I eject that player by rule. And then because of penalty from the folks in Chapel Hill, that player's can't officiate for two games. What happens if I have that? If that happens now, I know how that will be handled by the folks at the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. I won't get into the minutia of how that, what happens after that happens. There's a whole process that you know, regular folks don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if the player that I eject because of that, what happens if his or her grandfather is a state senator? And the state senator says, hey, I want to see that tape.
Yeah.
I don't think my grandkid should have been ejected, and then leans on this commission. Influence, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The commission is answerable to these politicians. All of a sudden, what will happen is officiating will implode from that move, because we have very consistently been managed by the folks in Chapel Hill at the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. I know everything that will happen if I ever were to make that move. If the government's running it, I don't know. And that brings a lot of indecisiveness and concern on our part, and it becomes a lot easier for folks at 35 years like me to say, you know what, it's just not worth it, I'm out.
And you don't want to do it anymore, which is already a problem in and of itself.
And you know, guys, if you don't have officials, you don't have games. So if you lose officials because of this dynamic, high school athletics, I mean, coaches can't play games if you don't have officials. Then what's this commission going to do?
Yeah, participation's already down.
Yeah, participation's down, and what you're referring to as well would actually put younger, more inexperienced officials in a crunch. And then what? If you think the abuse is bad now, people are not going to be able to understand that context of calls that don't go the way they feel like they should go.
We got a taste of this last season with COVID.
Yeah.
In our association, about 80 officials said, I don't want to officiate with COVID. And the rest of us did. We did not have as many games last year. First off, I'll note how expertly the North Carolina High School Athletic Association navigated the state to have sports seasons. I don't know that a government-run organization could have done that. They were unbelievable how they did that. But we had fewer officials last year, which meant the game schedule needed to be finessed to get them covered. You won't have that.
Steve Schwartz joining us here on the OG. All right, before we say goodbye, we've covered all of this, but have you actually heard from anybody in the NCGA over your concerns since you released this letter on Tuesday?
The answer is no.
Okay.
No.
Do you expect to?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, I think this is going to be between the General Assembly and the Home Office, the North Carolina High School Athletic Association.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly we are a substantial constituency, and we would love to know what happens with us, because we're about to enter the season, at least for basketball. We will, believe it or not, begin our season in September with our meetings and our training. And if this moves forward, and look, this is very fast, there's going to be a lot of officials who will, as independent contractors, who will just say, hey, look, I'm out. I don't, and then we have real trouble. It would be nice to hear from the North Carolina General Assembly. I'm not expecting it, because I think they're just going to deal with the folks in Chapel Hill, and then we'll learn.
Well, Steve, I appreciate the time. Appreciate you getting this out there, because I think people do need to know about what's going on behind the scenes and how this is impacting not just a committee or who runs the High School Athletic Association, but also how games can be officiated. Steve Schwartz, longtime official here in the Triangle. Appreciate the time, Steve. Have a good weekend.
You too, guys. Appreciate both of you guys for doing this.
Yeah.
It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Well, boys, Yacht Rock Week continues.
It should be Yacht Rock Week all the time.
I kind of agree, and I think Jillio does too. Shout out to Jillio for the idea and some lyrics again. We're singing about college realignment because obviously it's a big deal. And, you know, Greg Sankey and the SEC, it's just, he's the biggest part of it, you know? You're going to love this, Ovius.
There's a new league rising, some backroom devising, got others downsizing, you're the biggest part of me.
So sad.
We know Bob's getting cranky, but we don't care, frankly. You're on our side, Sankey. You're the biggest part of me.
It gets better.
We had a wish, baby. Oh, and you made it come true.
We were on your list, baby.
And old Bob didn't have a clue.
And now he's waiting all the way to 2025. Yeah, we got the book. The Big 12's a joke. Watch them try and survive.
Yeah. Good thing it's a Friday.
It just means more.
You know what, man? Look.
Yeah, I forgot to throw it just means more in there.
Yeah, it just means more. Like, I got to give you credit. When you go with the high notes, man, when the falsetto kicks in, I'm sold every single time.
I go for it.
Like, it's not – that is not your forte, but I don't care because you pour it out.
Yes.
That's what it's – it's about just singing your heart out when you go in that direction. Big fan.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.